Welcome back. Or good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. It's great to have you here. It's great to be here. I'm Jim Rome. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. All right, telephone number is toll free. Let's do better this hour than we did last hour phone-wise. 1-800-636-8686. If you're now just picking up the program, locking it in, here's how it sets up going forward. Arizona Cardinals running back James Conner will be joining me momentarily. Daniel Ponce de Leon, pitcher for the Cardinals, coming up at 40 past. And NFL draft prospect Landon Dickerson coming up in hour number three. Phone lines are open. Right back at it. We are joined by a running back for the Cardinals. He is a Pro Bowler. 936 yards from scrimmage and six touchdowns last season in 13 games. He did sign with Arizona on Tuesday. He was an All-American in college. He was an ACC Player of the Year, an ACC Offensive Player of the Year, and a two-time first-team All-ACC-er at Pitt. You might recall he was the 105th pick overall in 2017. He is also the author of Fear is a Choice, Tackling Life's Challenges with Dignity, Faith, and Determination. All of that belongs to James Conner. James, good to have you back. How are you?
Man, great, Jim. I appreciate that introduction, man.
Appreciate you.
It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, yes, you sir. Too. You too. Yes, sir. It's good to have you back, James. So let me ask you, going into free agency, like, what was that process like? What kind of emotions did you have? Was it nerve-wracking, or did you like the way the process played out?
I definitely liked the way the process played out. It was definitely different, just being my first time being a free agent and obviously just knowing Pittsburgh through and through. But I knew it was going to be an opportunity for me to grow if I did get into a new environment, which I did, totally different. You know, the West Coast now and they're out there in Arizona. So it's very exciting. I know it's a great opportunity for me. So it was different, but I loved how it turned out. I love where I'm at. So just ready to get running.
James Conner joining us. Excuse me, I was going to say, what was it about Arizona? I mean, I see it's a new opportunity, a chance to grow. You've always been about that. Specifically, what was it about that opportunity in the desert that appealed to you the most?
Just what they got going on out there and the veterans that they have out there. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, they just added J.J. Watt, and obviously Kyler is young and exciting, and the coaching staff. They got running back coach James Saxon. I had him in Pittsburgh, and so there was some familiarity there. And just young, exciting offense, and I felt like they believed in me, and so it definitely just changed, and I just felt like it was the right place, right time, and a good opportunity for me to continue to take my career to the next level.
James Conner joining us. All right, then, so you join an offense, as you mentioned, you've got Chase Edmonds, you've got Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, and more. So when you look at that offense, what kind of thoughts do you have, and then what are you going to bring to that offense?
I'm just going to bring you know, hard work and north and south attitude and going to run hard. You know, they have a great passing game already, so I know that it'll be opportunity and they'll be running lanes there. And just, you know, just ready to run and bring my skill set to that table. And I think it could be something special.
James, from where I'm sitting, like, I'm just on the outside looking in, but Kyler Murray to me is just, I mean, this dude is special. He's special. He is really different. I'm curious, as somebody in that league, what are your impressions of him and what he's done as a quarterback in his first two seasons? When you look at him, what do you see?
Man, I just see a dual threat. I see explosiveness. I see a winner. You know, I just seen he's like the all-time player in Texas history. And it just, you know, he's, like you said, just special, man. Fast on his feet, quick decision-making. Just a tremendous athlete in general. So to be back there with him and also Chase, you know, I just think we could get some special going in the running and passing game. And so, yeah, just a phenomenal athlete, though. That's what I see who's only going to continue to get better and grow.
James Conner joining us. You mentioned Chase once again. Like, you were talking about the fact that you've been watching film of Chase Edmonds and getting fired up about that. Like, specifically, what did you see on the film, and how do you see the two of you working together?
Man, what he brings, he really fast, great footwork. You know, he's can do it all, catching, and, you know, I see him getting involved in the passing game, and so and you know, he runs tough too, and I run tough, and so I think he's definitely faster. You know, so be change of pace, and you know, I'm going to come with some speed too. I'm continue to work this off season, but you know, I just see a nice little team going there. That's what I see. That's what I can see.
We're talking to James Conner. You know, you mentioned Pittsburgh, too. Like, you have a new opportunity, and it's a chance for you to grow and attack a new challenge. I know that's rejuvenating, but Pittsburgh is a city that meant so much to you over the years and you to them. How would you describe the relationship you had with that city and what it did mean to you and does?
Oh, yeah, it'll always have a place in my heart. You know, it's a city where, you know, play my college ball and, you know, have great relationships with everybody there. Dr. Marks, that's my uncle, you know, it helped me save my life and, you know, and then be able to get drafted by them. So, like I said, the last 8 years I spent there has been molding me, you know, and shaping me into the man I am today. You know, that just that work ethic and just toughness. And so I carry that with me. You know, I've been in PA through and through. So through any type of weather, any adversity, everything up there is just, you know, Pittsburgh always have a place in my heart for sure.
James Conner is joining us. You know, there's what the city meant to you, but there's what you meant to the city as well. As an example, Pat Narduzzi, who's the head coach of Pitt, told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that when his mother-in-law was battling cancer, she would talk to you about it. Quote, they talk chemo together. How many people can do that? He inspired her, no question. On her bad days, she would put on her James Conner Pitt baseball cap. It would make her feel better, end quote. I got to ask then, like, what do you remember about those conversations and what's it mean to you to have that kind of legacy and that kind of impact for people around you?
There's no replacement. You know, there's nothing. I wouldn't change anything in my past. You know, that's all just God's plan for me. You know, I feel like he put me through certain things and situations because, you know, he knew that I could be able to be inspiration to other people. And yes, definitely with Coach, you know, as I just remember those talks and just trying to give encouragement, inspiration, and just give hope. That's my life. That's my life. It's just a part of who I am, you know, with cancer and toughness and everything. I just want to, you know, be able to give hope to others. And so I'll never forget none of those conversations that I've had with, you know, Coach's mother and also any other, you know, people I inspired and talked to. It's been thousands and thousands, and so I truly am just so very thankful for you know, my life, and I know it'll only continue to grow and keep continuing to help others.
James Conner joining us. It's a beautiful thing to say, really. Like, it can't be easy when you're that inspiration. I mean, it's great. It's an amazing thing, but at the same time, I could see where it might get kind of tiring at times or maybe be hard work. But, you know, you and I have talked about your journey over time, your cancer diagnosis in the past. The other day, somebody tweeted to you saying, quote, just wanted to share that my last imaging came back negative. I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in July. You kept me inspired and motivated. And like you, I can say I'm a cancer survivor. Keep doing you, my guy. I'll forever be a James Conner fan. I would just ask you, like, when you see something like that, or specifically that, how does that make you feel?
Man, it's indescribable feeling. You know, I'm just, like I say, forever thankful for that, and you know that you can never replace something like that. And I just want to, you know, it's special because for people to say, you know, it's one thing for people to be Steelers fans and Cardinal fans, but for them to say a James Conner fan, you know, and how they, you know, I've been tweeted pictures of people with a 30 jersey on while they're, you know, laying in that chair getting chemotherapy pumped into them, and it's just, you know, they use my jersey as like a symbol of strength and a signal of, you know, a symbol of hope. And so, you know, those messages will never get old to me. You know, it keeps me going. And so I salute those ones that have, you know, the courage to, you know, be vulnerable like I have and put themselves out there and let me know that, you know, I was the inspiration for them. And like I said, it'll never get old, and I'm just so forever, forever thankful. And like I said, that's my life mission.
I really, really appreciate that response. James Conner joining me for a few more moments. So if you're an inspiration to so many people, who are some of the people who have inspired you over the years?
Oh, man, I've been inspired by multiple people. Just in the cancer football world, Eric Berry has been an inspiration for me, you know, being the first to do it. Been inspired by Ian Malaszewski up in the area. I've been inspired, you know, by all my brothers. You know, I'm the youngest. I got, you know, 4 older brothers, and, you know, they just always believed in me and encouraged me, and I just always wanted to be like them. And, you know, my parents, everybody, family, you know, just the ones that came before me, you know, all inspired by truly everybody.
James Conner joining us. You know, like you mentioned at the very top, that you're looking to grow. You're always looking to grow. And I know this based on the conversations you and I have had in the past. So, like, how different are you at this point in your career compared to when you first arrived in the NFL as a player and the way you think and approach it?
A lot different. You know, this, you know, it's definitely stages and there's levels to it. You know, you come in early as a rookie and you're trying to find your footing. And then second year, had a good year. And third year, you know, you have your ups and downs. You battle with injuries, but you learn how to continue to take care of your body and just, you know, be a pro. And the opportunity for me to come to AZ and learn from all these veterans here, you know, I feel like I'm only going to reach new heights and continue to grow. And so, you know, you just approach the game. You know, I see now, you know, going to a different team and, you know, you just realize the business aspect of it and, you know, just get different viewpoints of it. But the main thing is just being healthy and also just contributing, being productive. And when I'm healthy, I'm productive as they come. And so, you know, I'm just going to keep putting my best foot forward, keep getting my body ready and like I always do, and let God take care of the rest.
It's such a good message. Such a good message. Big time opportunity and a new start in Arizona. Cardinals running back James Conner, my guest, a Pro Bowler. You want to read that book also if you get a chance. Fear is a Choice. My man, great to have you back on the show, James. I appreciate you very much. Thanks for doing that. Have a great day. Hope we can do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man. Great talking to you, James. Really good to have you back. Always had great, great admiration for him and respect for him. And what a great spot for him to be right now with the Cardinals. That offense is loaded. Loaded. And when he makes that statement that I just want to go there and get close to some of these vets, watch how they work, watch how they conduct themselves, this is a big reason why they're bringing him in. So the younger players can see the way he goes about his work, how he carries himself. I mean, that's a pro's pro. That's a professional athlete through and through. So my thanks to James Conner. Good to have him back. Let me finish my thought really quickly on Ben Askren. And I ended hour number two by talking about the matchup he has with Jake Paul. And that is a celebrity boxing match. It's going to be an 8-round boxing match. There is no MMA. That's not going to the ground. They can't use elbows and knees, and it can't go to the ground. And Askren laid out what the challenge was. He's part of the podcast that we did this week, and I pushed out on Wednesday. But he wants to be known for more than just, and understandably so. Again, this guy was a champion, an Olympian, and an extremely, extremely well-respected wrestler and MMAer. The guy deserves to be known for more than just being in a celebrity fight and more than just being the guy on the other end of taking that flying knee from Jorge Masvidal. He was on the wrong end of the fastest knockout in UFC history. Kind of hard to control a narrative when you're him and Masvidal lands that knee, right? I mean, the ultimate meme. No sooner, he hadn't even come to, and already it was viral. There's no way to control that, right? But there is a way to control your response to something like that. And I was incredibly impressed when he told me this about that particular knockout.
It wasn't like I got my ass kicked over 15 minutes. I got one move done to me, and there's nothing I can do to change that. Now, that's out there. It's out there forever. And it's just, listen, it's part of what happened to me. It's part of, and honestly, I use it a lot now when I'm coaching kids, because a lot of them, they get quite a bit of anxiety around big events. And, you know, I was like, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Right. And now I literally have the worst thing. No one has had as embarrassing of a knockout as I did. And listen, you know what? I'm the same guy the next day. No big deal. I wake up and I move on with my life. You're going to do the same, right? So I use that with my athletes a lot. So now, you know, something that was a really negative moment for me, I've been able to turn into a teachable moment for others.
This dude is so good, right? He says that when he works with young athletes and they're feeling anxiety about what might happen, he just says to them, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing that could happen did happen to me, and I'm still here. I mean, it's really profound. Like, he took the most embarrassing moment and he uses it as a teaching moment with a great attitude. I love it. Now, even though he's gotten over that moment, doesn't mean that he's not still a little bit annoyed that Jorge continues to talk about that moment.
He just won't get over it. It's like, yeah, George, you've been gloating about this for 2 years. Like, don't you have anything else going on in your life? Like, get over it, you know? I mean, if you want to brag on this one event for the next decade, or what are you going to do with this? And that's really it. And then I guess the second part of that would be he has this fourth grader mentality of like might is right. And he's like, oh, if you don't say anything he likes, he's like, oh, I'm going to beat you up. Wait till I see you next time. It's like, you already knocked me out. Like, it can't really get much worse than that. I guess you can try to beat me up again if you want to. But it's just such like a fourth grade mentality.
That is such an amazing soundbite. Ben Askren is so awesome. And I even said to him during the conversation, I'm like, Ben, you know, respectfully, I really admire you, but I really like Masvidal too. But that is really funny what he said. Like, oh, next time I see you, I'm going to kick your ass.
Oh, I'm going to beat you up.
He said, what are you going to do to me that you haven't already done to me? You hit me with that flying knee. You put me to sleep in 5 seconds. Exactly what are you going to do? Beat me up in 3 seconds next time? So what I'm getting at is this. That is such a great soundbite. Whether you're into combat sports or not, it just doesn't matter. Ben Askren makes his podcast extremely enjoyable, really entertaining for everybody because he's insightful, he's honest, and he's funny as hell. And you can tell he's in a place in his life where he really does not give a damn what people think of him. And guys like that are always great to talk to. It's a really fun episode, really good episode. Check it out. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, JimRome.com, or use the link that I tweeted out yesterday. Check it out. You're going to want to hear this one. It's good. 1-800-636-8686. All right, quick timeout. When we return, phone lines are still open. I'm going to talk some Cardinal baseball with Daniel Ponce de Leon at 1040. Also, I want to talk about Luka and Steph doing Luka and Steph things last night. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs and your lawn and garden batteries as well. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. In fact, kick off the season right with fresh batteries for your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, purchase any Superstar lawn and garden battery. Get a $10 gift card after mail-in rebate. Do not miss out on the savings at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're close, they're convenient, they're known for guaranteed low prices every single day and excellent customer service from professional parts people that you know you can trust. What I'm saying is O'Reilly Auto Parts is here with the right parts and advice from their professional parts people and their free loaner tool program. There is no need to purchase a tool if you're only going to use it once. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Refundable deposit is required at the time of rental. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Ask about their free loaner tool program or go to O'ReillyAuto.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
If you're checking out the simulcast, how about that bump back? The bump back. TV term. There's Alvy in all his glory, looking up at the camera, letting us know how lucky we all are that he's gracing us and blessing us with his appearance. He's here. For the first time in a long, long time, we do not have a train wreck Thursday. They're a thing of the past. We no longer have to worry about it. The prodigal son is back. This weekend, the PGA Tour returns to CBS as many of the world's best golfers descend upon the famous Harbor Town of Golf Links course, or the famous Harbor Town Golf Links course, perform. Of course, it's in Hilton Head, the RBC Heritage. Live coverage getting underway, 3 Eastern and 12 Pacific on Saturday and Sunday, both on CBS. More on Trainwreck Thursday in a minute. Quickly, some reaction. Rome, Wisconsin's own Ben freaking Askren lived up to the hype in the podcast. He is the epitome of Wisconsin-born athletes. Humble but hellacious. Johnny and GB. War more Ben Askren in the jungle. War Ben shredding up Jake Paul like Wisco cheddar. You know, I have one regret about that conversation. I wanted to get into a conversation with him about crypto. My man loves Bitcoin. Loves Bitcoin. He's constantly tweeting about cryptocurrency. And I couldn't wait to get to it, but I got so caught up in everything else that I let him go and I didn't ask him one question. And one of the things I most wanted to talk to him about was crypto, and I missed it. Now, this is interesting. Like, for instance, did you know who he was prior to those sound bites or that podcast? Did you have an opinion about Ben Askren prior to that? Did it change after you heard him? For instance, Bella says, "Hi, Jim. Thanks for having Ben Askren on the podcast. As a fan of the UFC, I always thought of him as kind of a butthole. But he's not. He sounds funny and thoughtful, and I hope he knocks that YouTube punk the hell out." Bella B in Calgary.
Butthole.
Yeah, no, he's not a butthole. Guy is really funny. Really funny, really smart, really thoughtful, really different, and most of all, real. Real, like he easily could have said, and I expected him to say, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Do you know who I've been in the cage with? Do you know what I've accomplished? Do you know who the hell I am?" Understand, ain't no YouTube celebrity gonna hurt me or touch me. It's not what he said. What he said was, if the guy's not that good, I'm gonna kick his ass. However, if the guy is better than I think, it could be a long night for me. But either way, I'm good because I'm getting paid. I mean, you got to respect that, right? I do. I do. He's being real. Now, that's not to say that he won't prepare. That's not to say that he doesn't have pride. That's not to say that the dude's not competitive. He's all those things. But he's not a boxer. And he could lose. I'm here to tell you, the guy could get beat. The guy literally could get beat, and it would not surprise me. And for the record, what he's saying is, it wouldn't surprise him either. It could happen. But what he's also saying is, I'm going to wake up on Sunday morning unless I die in the ring, and that's not going to happen. Not in a boxing exhibition. And I will wake up. And when I do wake up, I'm going to have a much fatter bank account than when I went to sleep. Hey, Rome, I agree with Ben Askren. I also made a lot of money sucking at boxing. Regards, Conor McGregor.
You little fanboy bitch.
Thing is, he didn't embarrass himself. And he made a lot of money. I don't need to see that again, but I was kind of into that. I got behind that. Another fight that I watched and I paid for. Jimmy, I think Ben Askren predicting the outcome of his upcoming fight was extremely clear and to the point. Regards, Ira Craig.
If they can get tonight, I could see this thing done in 4 or 5. If not, I think it's going to go probably 6 or 7.
Ugh. Ugh. What are you, in fourth grade? Are you going to beat me up again? You already did.
If you don't say anything he likes, he's like, "Ugh, I'm going to beat you up."
Hey, Rome, a couple of months ago or so, it was mentioned that Ritt was once on a game show called America Says. I happened to see that episode last week. Let's just say that his appearance went about as well as that time you let him host a segment on the show. Ritt was the weakest link on the team that day. However, his team did win, which is the main thing. They didn't get the grand prize, though, and Ritt definitely should not go on Jeopardy anytime soon. Hey, Ritt, just keep on drinking that cocoa, smashing candy, running adult kickball leagues, and going on game shows. You do you, man. Game on!
Game on.
Jeremiah in Greenville. War playing, putting on the Ritt every Thursday.
Each Thursday he wears a tie. In his mind he looks so fly. Up front he sits, putting on the Ritt. Lady Clone call, War Lady Clone drop. Rome says, "Damn Ritt, can't make him stop." Ike gives him fits, putting on the red. Starts each day with cans of Dr. Pepper. Stuffs his face with Skittles from a platter. Diabetes.
Diabetes. Putting on the red. That slays. That song is so good, and it's getting better with time. Especially when she goes to the diabetes card.
Diabetes.
How are you going to rhyme diabetes?
diabetes.
That's strong. Wait, are you applauding her or the fact that you just got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes? Come on, Rit.
Diabetes.
Anyway, hey, Adam, really quickly. So normally this is Trainwreck Thursday, and Trainwreck Thursday usually hit you and me between the eyes. What's it like to have that prodigal son back?
I love it. I think you love it. I think everyone loves it. There are two people that don't, probably Alvin. I don't mean to speak for him. And the guy who hates it the most is Garrett Ritt. He sent me an email last night. I'll read it verbatim, that said, "What the hell is going on? I just heard I'm not on the board tomorrow. My audience is going to be very disappointed. We may have to prepare for a revolt. Just saying."
He's just saying it, but he just means that.
He loves...
Wouldn't you think somebody who had diabetes would be more concerned about the battle on his hands?
Diabetes.
He absolutely loves running the board. What's funny is when Alvin left in the past, whoever would get tasked with running the board would dread it. It would be an all-time grip fest because they know Alvin does things that they can't do. Ritt moved right in, loved it, and said, "I can do all of that in my own way. It's probably better than what Alvin's been doing for 14 years.
Bring it on.
I'll do the week that was. I'll play my own drops. I'll crush Gavin. I'll crush that lady clone talking about shared belief. I don't care. I play by my own rules." So the fact that Ritt
I won't turn Jim's mic on.
Correct.
I've got diabetes.
And now that he's here without a tie and he's sitting in the back row again, this is a horrible Thursday for him. It's great for all of us except for Ritt. He hates it.
Did he bring a tie, Ritt? Are you wearing a tie? Wow.
Oh,
dude.
Wow. I didn't know that. He brought one.
That's ridiculous, Ritt.
It's weird to ask for things and then get them, too. Like, you know, you tell Alvin we need this sound, and then all of a sudden the sound appears. That's really nice on a Thursday.
Yeah, Ritt's thing is kind of like, you're not going to get what you need or want. You're going to get what I give you.
It's the Garrett Ritt show.
It is.
It's the show, yep.
It's Ritt's world. All right, thanks, Adam, for weighing in. There you have it. Trainwreck Thursday, now officially a thing of the past. It went on for about a year or 5 years or whatever it was. Ritt, I hope you enjoyed it. There is no way in hell, old man, you ever get anywhere near that front row ever again. Just saying. Game on.
Game on.
My man, if I were you, I'd be a lot more focused on that diabetes diagnosis than you not being able to sit up front with your tie. Game off, bro. And if you're not careful, life off. Take care of yourself, man.
Diabetes.
That's not something to make light of, Ritt. It's not funny, the fact that you have diabetes. Come on, man. Clean it up.
Diabetes.
When we return... St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Daniel Ponce de Leon joins me. That's coming up next. Hey, you definitely want to check out episode 170 of the Jim Rome podcast. Don't do it now. Wait until after the program. Wait until you do it at the gym, maybe over the weekend. Actually, before the fight. The fight is Saturday night. You want to do it before then. But the Ben Askren interview is awesome. It is time for a bottom of the hour sports update. Here is the latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That's true. That is true. I am Jim Rome. I am live. I'm in Southern California. And this next story is absolutely unbelievable. My guest has a story that is absolutely unbelievable. And I'm really eager to get to this. We are joined right now by a pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. He is 1-1 on the year. He was initially drafted in the 24th round out of La Mirada High School in La Mirada, California. However, he has been drafted four times in his career. He was a 9th round pick of the Cardinals in the 2014 MLB draft. He is the author of a new book, which is amazing. The book is entitled One Line Drive, and that book is out right now. Daniel Ponce de Leon joins me. Daniel, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's really nice to talk to you. I think the story is amazing, and I'm eager to get into it. Before we get into the story, Daniel, it's amazing on so many different levels. I want to ask you about the start of the season. You came out of the bullpen on Tuesday against the Nationals. As somebody who has both been a starter and worked out of the bullpen, how would you describe the differences in each role?
I guess the adrenaline. You know, as a starter, you got the whole day to plan out, and you got a whole routine. And then as a reliever, you know, you get the call and all of a sudden you just got to get going, get hot and get out there. So that's what I've noticed, a big difference. And obviously the routines are a bit different too.
Right. All right. So 12 games in, it's not a really large sample size, but overall, what are your early impressions of this team and the ceiling that it might have or what it might be? How good can this group be?
This team is good, really good. You know, we're just a little bit slumpy at times. So if we just get clicking together at the same time, I think we're going to be pretty dang good.
All right, so Daniel, your story, as I mentioned, is pretty amazing. So people can fully understand. Let's go back. You played your high school ball in La Mirada. That's about 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now. But growing up, baseball wasn't even your favorite sport. What were you like as a high school pitcher?
A bit ignorant of baseball, I guess you could say. You know, in high school, I threw a four-seam that I called, but I thought was a sinker, and I threw a curveball on the two-seam, and then I didn't even know what a changeup was, so I didn't know much, but all I knew was I knew how to compete.
All right, so early on, which you knew, though, you knew you had a future in football, or so you thought, and you thought you might end up at UCLA or USC. At the end of the season banquet for baseball, you get a phone call. What do you remember about that phone call?
Yeah, I was sitting there at the baseball banquet and get a call from a scout named Jake Wilson. And he goes, hey, we're from the Tampa Bay Rays, and we just selected you in the 24th round, and we'll come in contact with you later. And I said, okay, thanks, bye. And I remember sitting there like, the draft was today? I didn't even know when the draft was.
Crazy. So the draft was that day. It's actually pretty funny, right? You didn't even know when it was. You get drafted, but instead of signing with the Rays, instead you go to the University of Arizona on a baseball scholarship. What was your time like there?
I pitched three innings at Arizona, and just didn't really make a lot of sense for me. And at the end of the season meeting, they told me they wanted me to come back and be a starter for them on the weekend. So that was pretty exciting. Until halfway through that summer, I got a call saying, hey, we're not renewing your scholarship, so go ahead and search around, please.
So what's that like?
It was heartbreaking. I remember just turning around and getting my pillow and just kind of screaming into it. And then within the next day, you know, I started receiving a bunch of phone calls from D2s, JUCOs, and different schools. And we ended up scheduling at Cypress Junior College, which was near my house.
We're talking to Daniel Ponce de Leon. All right, so you have a number of schools that are interested in you, and you choose Cypress Community College. You get drafted for a second time, but then you decide to go to another college instead, and you go to the University of Houston. After that season, you were drafted by the Cubs, and they agreed to give you a $100,000 signing bonus and that they would pay for you to finish college when you got that chance. So at that point, what was your life like, and how did you feel?
I was feeling pretty good. You know, it was kind of what I wanted, and I thought I was ready to go out and play some pro ball. And then, you know, had different news otherwise.
I was going to say, Daniel, so you're like, you're back on track. Like, this is the way it's supposed to play out. So you go to Mesa, Arizona to get your career started. You have a physical, you have a few MRIs, and then they tell you they don't like the nerve placement in your right arm. I mean, what was your reaction when you got that news?
It was one of those, like, in a movie scene where everything kind of goes silent and you hear that, like, beep sound. That's what it felt like again. And I was just so confused. Like, where did this come from? You know, I didn't miss any time that season at Houston pitching. Never spent any time on the DL. And all of a sudden, I'm not getting signed because something in my arm with the nerve. So I was confused and angry. But I asked Houston if I'd come back, and they said sure, but we had to go through the compliance office, and that ended up being a long losing battle to the NCAA.
Daniel Ponce de Leon is joining us. He's got a brand new book called One Line Drive. I mean, this is crazy. So they rule, the NCAA rules that you're ineligible to return to Houston because you had received the offer from the Cubs. So not only were you ineligible to play at Houston, you couldn't play at any other NCAA school. So then you end up going to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. Like, how did you find that school, and what was that experience like?
My pitching coach at Houston, he coached the pitching coach that was at Embry-Riddle, and that was the connection there. I'd never even heard of NEI. I soon found out there was one in, you know, La Mirada called Biola, but I found out that Embry-Riddle was ranked third in the nation, so I thought if I was going to go play NEI ball, I might as well go to a really good school. So I ended up going there and went to an aeronautical school.
I mean, the story is almost hard to even follow. There are so many twists and so many turns, and you just kept bumping up against so many obstacles and so many dead ends, but you never gave up. I would imagine there were tough days, but you never gave up. Why was that, and what kept you going?
I was never taught to give up. I just kind of kept going and going. Not only that, but I had a pretty dang good support system with my family, especially my dad. He was there. He drove with me from California to Houston and from Houston to Embry-Riddle, which is in Daytona Beach, Florida. So he was with me the whole time, helped me out, drove me through and supported me through these times. So there was times where I didn't have any money and I needed some food, and I had my dad there for me.
And the thing is, I mean, it's challenging enough, right? So you think maybe this is rock bottom, but then I fast forward ahead to 2017, and at the start of the book, you were with the Memphis Redbirds in 2017, the Cards AAA team. You were starting a game in Des Moines against the Iowa Cubs. As you write, it turned out to be a very important day, and you remember random things from that day. What are the memories you have from that morning of that day and as you got ready to make that start?
It was one of those day games in the minor leagues where it's a kid's day, so you know you're going to begin some SpongeBob in the speakers. And I just remember it's a pretty sunny day, and you got the Iowa field and they got the City Hall thing in the backdrop, so it's hard to see as a hitter. So you're thinking it's in your favor. And had a normal routine, never really thought twice about it, and went through my normal day.
So Daniel, in the second inning, you're facing a leadoff hitter and the catcher calls for a two-seam fastball. You throw the pitch and you write in your book, quote, "As soon as the ball left my hand, I wish I could have reached out and taken it back," end quote. What gave you that feeling? What happened next?
As a pitcher, you throw in so many baseballs, when one's not coming out good. So those are the ones you try to go and grab on the way there, but can't do it. And I remember watching it go right down the middle, not breaking, and then Caratini, who was the hitter at the time, hit it right back up the middle. And I remember seeing the seams on the ball spinning back up and just could not react quick enough and took it right off the temple.
Daniel, you also remember the two sounds from that moment. You talk about the sound of the ball hitting the bat and then the sound of the ball hitting your head. You've also said that you remember seeing the ball coming back right there in the seams. Like, I don't want to bring up painful memories, but what else do you remember about that sequence? Or do you remember?
I remember laying there and looking up, and my whole team was surrounded me, and my trainer was standing there, and I remember him asking me questions like, what's my name, birthday, what year is it? And I recall answering these questions correctly, but the way I was answering it, the trainer, Scott Einzel, did not enjoy the way I was doing it, so he called over the ambulance stretcher, and I was laying there like, why are we doing this? Well, I played football growing up, and I've been, I've had my bell rung a few times, and I didn't think it was too bad at the time. So I'm laying there just with a bit of a headache, wondering what's all going on, and so they get me on the stretcher, and when they get me on the stretcher and put me in the ambulance, that's when stuff starts getting a little bit worse for me.
And Daniel, the point is also, the trainer said that after you arrived in the hospital, a chaplain approached him and started talking to him. It was at that point that the trainer realized there was a chance that you could actually lose your life. You might die. Did you ever have that thought yourself?
Not initially. When I was in the ambulance, that's when I started feeling worse. And then once I got to the hospital, I started getting real dizzy, and I ended up throwing up on the nurses, and I felt pretty awful about it. And after that, the memories fading pretty quickly, and then my last memories of them shaving my head with some pretty bad clippers. And then after that, laying in the bed talking to my dad.
Daniel, the amazing thing, scary thing, your wife Jen, she watched the game online from Florida, and your young son. What did she think happened?
She did not really understand, because it's hard, especially in minor league video, to tell what really happened. And the announcers were doing the best job to keep it PG there, but they didn't want to alarm too many people. But you don't really know what's going on. And luckily, I had a buddy in the bullpen. Right when that happened, he ran into the clubhouse and ended up giving his wife the trainer's number, and his wife sent my wife the trainer's number, so then they were able to be in direct contact right away.
Obviously, you and I are having this conversation right now. You're a pitcher with the St. Louis Cardinals. You've got a brand new book called One Line Drive. All is well that ends well, as terrifying as that all was. I mean, you came all the way back from that. You were called up to the majors in 2018. In your debut, you pitched 7 innings of no-hit ball. What do you remember about that day, and just how special was it, given everything you and I just talked about?
I remember just feeling real blessed, real joyful, and I feel like, not just for myself, but for everyone who's been there in my life, you know. It was kind of a big old teamwork deal right there, and it felt good. It felt good to honor everybody and being able to go back and just hug and kiss everyone after that game. It felt like a blessing.
It's amazing. So back in February, you and your wife welcomed a daughter into the world. What is her name, and what has that experience been like for you?
Sophia, and it's great. Yeah, my third baby. And she's my little sweet pea, and I miss her dearly right now. I cannot wait till they come see me in middle of May.
Daniel Ponce de Leon is joining us. So, Daniel, what was it like to put all these thoughts on paper and to write the book? Was it cathartic? Was it hard? What was it like to actually do that?
Well, initially I did not want to write it, but they did a little convincing from my inner circle, and what really set the tip over was the fans that reached out to me, and they said how they were affected by whatever my life, and I'm like, well, if we could affect lives and change lives, then you know I'm into writing this story. And my group of guys, Jeff, Brian, Tom, you know, those guys, and Jan, they put together a good group of people to help write this thing out, and I think the product that came out of it was fantastic.
I think it's fantastic. And again, has there ever been anybody drafted 4 times from 4 different schools, had a scholarship ripped, had a signing bonus ripped, and banned by the NCAA? Has anybody ever gone through that before that you know of?
No, not that I know of, and I haven't exactly researched it, but no, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't know for a fact, but I would have to venture a guess and say no. He's got a brand new book out. It's called One Line Drive. You should look for that. He's 1-1 on the year. Daniel Ponce de Leon, my guest. Daniel, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your story. Thank you very much. Great to have you on, and good luck with everything else.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Really enjoyed that, Daniel. Thank you. That's such an amazing story and a difficult story to tell because there's so many different twists and turns. But he came out the other end. That's the epitome of coming out the other end. That line drive, that is so eerie and scary, the way he lays that out. That the second it left his hand, he wanted it back. And as the ball was reversed, he could see the seams coming and he couldn't react. And it hit him in the head and it could have cost him his life. All the way back to the majors. All right, that's hour number 2. When we return, an open segment to start hour 3. Your phone calls are next.